This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that Twin Cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my light beside the golden door. Emma Lazarus.
The wretched refuge of the teeming shores to be brought here, but we have a new administration. And Juan Manuel Montes Bojorquez, 23, has lived in the United States since he was 9 years of age. He said he had a valid permit. He has become the first so-called dreamer to be deported by the Trump administration. Responding to the detention and deportation of Juan Bojorquez and Trump's threat to 800,000 other deferred action for childhood arrivals, DACA, the labor leader of the mighty 32BJ, one of the country's largest unions, part of SEIU, said President Trump's decision to deport nearly 1 million dreamers is a disgusting act of cowardice and cruelty. Repealing DACA is a low in a presidency marked by discrimination and the removal of rights for people of color. Deporting nearly 1 million young people will not create a single job or make America better for anyone.
It will harm our economy and further erode the values holding our nation together. It will compound the problems of an already broken immigration system, and it will needlessly put at risk of deportation people who love this country and are committed to its future.
And we're very pleased to have with us Hector Figueroa, president of Local 32BJ Service Employees International Union, the largest property services union in the country. So I want to start with Juan Manuel, 23. What makes a union like yours jump to the defense of the dreamers or other immigrants who have been harassed, harangued, bullied, threatened, and demeaned by President Trump? Is that a responsibility? Is that something organized labor should be engaged in?
It certainly is, because many of our members are immigrants themselves. And in fact, of the 800,000 dreamers, no doubt, a number of them are the children of members of 32BJ or members of the union themselves. You know, and that is not true just for 32BJ. We got recently the Teamsters. President George Miranda wrote a great op-ed about the deportation of a Teamster member. He called it a wake-up call of why labor needs to be on this issue. The RWSU, Stuart Applebaum. So we're seeing more and more unions taking on the offense, fighting not just for DACA recipients or members who may be on the path of deportation unfairly and unjustifiably, but really taking on this president and this administration, which has fundamentally criminalized large numbers of hardworking immigrants who are in this country and now wants to criminalize people on TPS, criminalize people who are DACA recipients. They're trying to expand the pool of workers who need to fix their immigration status as opposed to solving the broken immigration system. So, yes, it is a union issue in many dimensions.
And your union has had members of the union who've been detained by DACA or deported. Do you want to talk about it? I believe there were two of them recently.
Yeah, well, we have Juan Vivares, the spouse of a member, who, you know, was going to be deported for the simple so-called criminal act of having crossed the border. Juan was escaping the situation in Colombia, the civil war in Colombia, and the amount of violence that has been associated with that. And many of his friends were either themselves victims of violence or worse. And he decided that finding a home here in the U.S. was his way out of that reality, partly sponsored by our own, you know, policies, we should say. And when he found himself in this country, he has followed the laws, he has built a beautiful family, and, you know, when he tried to fix his status and try to really legalize his condition, he only found himself detained in the presence of his baby and his wife, our member of 32BJ, Yahaira. And we solved that issue for now. We had to mount a significant campaign to get this member back with his family, but his fight is not over. Francisco Rodriguez, a janitor at MIT, the same situation. You know, a law-abiding, very high-regarded member of the MIT community, also on the path to deportation. And what your listeners need to understand, when the administration says that they are going after criminals, what they really mean is they're going after anyone who have violated the law, including the law of being here in this country, having crossed the border or having a visa that expired. That is not a criminal act. In fact, that means that what that represents is a failure of our immigration system that doesn't allow people like Juan, people like Francisco, the Dreamers and others, to be able to be here in the U.S. as full residents. And it is on us. Generations of Americans have their ancestors who came here to this country without that kind of a system in place. And we cannot victimize and criminalize those who are being suffering from our broken immigration laws. What we need is to fix the immigration laws, recognize that these are our neighbors, our friends, our family members, and find a path for them to be in this country and ultimately to become citizens if they choose to.
President Figueroa, I want to put it in the affirmative now. And I should say that the last time I saw you, actually, it was a while ago, we were marching in defense and support of Sean Bell, who was killed with multiple shots right before he was to be married by members of the Street Crimes Unit of the New York City Police Department. And I used to work for the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, which, while very conservative in many respects, did champion, because that was its membership base, it did champion the rights of immigrants. But it would seem that there are too few members of the labor community that have plied themselves to support the full and comprehensive identity and lives of their members and the public. So I want to put it to you, how important do you think it is to continue what certainly your union, what you have done, and that is to be supporting the human rights, the, we hope, legal rights, but certainly the human and civil rights of your membership and making labor part of the broader kind of labor community sphere in order to grow its influence and to become more prominent in the lives of the working men and women in this country?
Well, I'd say when you look at the history of fighting for immigrant rights, there have been a number of unions. I'm glad that you mentioned the LGW, the ACTU, which became UNITE, and then later merged with the hotel workers, became UNITE HRE. They've been, you know, fighting for immigrant rights, the laborers, the farm workers, CWA, Teamsters I mentioned before. Perhaps what has really become imperative is now for those unions who at various moments fought for, with the AFL-CIO, for comprehensive immigration reform during the era of Trump, after Trump took office. You know, many of our brothers and sisters were still trying to figure out what the Trump administration was about. And it's no secret that a number of union members voted for Trump, responding to his message that he was going to take on the rigged system and that he was going to be there for the, you know, forgotten, you know, working class. And many people have analyzed this as being really a reference to white workers, and clearly this administration has, you know, followed along that interpretation. I think that what is really important now is for unions not to be on the fence, and that unions need to come out strong for immigrant rights, for racial justice, for really equality and for reproductive rights, because this administration's attacks on civil liberties are attacks on our members. Our members are people whose identity in this society comes from who they love, who they are, you know, what they look like, where do they come from. And if we don't take a stand against an administration that is trying to divide us and is fundamentally racist in its posture on issues of immigration and civil rights, then we are not defending and protecting our members. We are doing a disservice to them because this is who they are. And even if a union is majority of the same racial complexion of the president, that doesn't mean it should not be fighting for those members who are not. And it doesn't mean that this president's policies actually are helpful to the plight of white workers. You know, on the contrary, you know, it's actually very harmful, and we've seen in every decision of this administration. So to your listeners, I would say encourage your union to be part of the resistance. Encourage your union to take a stand for immigrant rights. Again, a number of unions are responding heroically. Again, the case of the Teamsters recently, who has seen one of the members been deported, and they have been very public. You know, we have to lead as union leaders, as member leaders of the rank and file, our organizations to do what is right for working people, and not to wait and see what happens. The time for waiting and seeing is long gone. The colors of this administration are very clear: anti-worker, xenophobic, racist, misogynist. And I think that we have to fight against all that.
But even on the economic front, on the very narrow issues that labor unions deal with every day, it seems that unions are not speaking out on right-to-work laws. They're not speaking out on overtime regulations, on any number of issues that you would expect them to be a lot more vocal on. Do you see that?
I think that there is not a question so much of speaking, Ken. It's a question of how loudly do you speak, and are you actually organizing public opinion around your message and on your positions. There have been a number of tweets and statements around many of the economic decisions by this administration, which have been critical of the administration. But the next step is a step that is most crucial at this time, and that is to be out on the streets with those who are fighting on those issues. And yes, you're totally right that on the economic issues, you have not seen the same equivalent, you know, mobilization that we have seen around immigrant rights, or we have seen with the Women's March and in response to Charlottesville, or the Muslim ban on the part of labor to the action that this administration has taken. I'm still optimistic that that's going to happen. I think labor takes some time, given its complexity, the diversity of economic interests, geographic concentration, to respond. But if we don't respond, we then, you know, are going to lament the decline of labor further. I think this is the moment that offers the greatest opportunity. Gallup had a poll showing that the American public is far more likely to support unions today than, you know, in the recent past. And the numbers, I believe, were on the high 60% or 63%, something of that order of magnitude, much more than many other organizations, quite frankly, certainly more than Congress, certainly more than Republicans or Democrats. So we have an opportunity And that is without the kind of mobilization that is necessary. Now, the movement for the 5 for 15 has been incredibly successful. SEIU has been moving that, but a lot of other unions supported it and gave a level of presence of labor issues in the presidential elections last year that certainly was better than many other electoral cycles. We have to take that effort and blow it up around the country, expand it significantly, and make the demand for better wages, for good jobs, for, a saying on your working conditions, a demand that, is made strongly and in the strongest possible way by labor unions. So, yes, there has been manifestations of discontent with some of the policies of the president. Yes, that manifestation of discontent has not been followed by large mobilization or at least, significant organizing. But there are examples. It's not totally, a lost cause. I mean, I think that the organizing at the Nissan plant was a lost election, but it was an effort to organize. And there have been manifestations of economic demands by unions in different places. We have yet to see that translate into a far more massive organized effort. And, I think that we can get there. And if we don't get there by 18, it's going to be hard for our issues to be the issues that candidates champion and that the public rallies around.
President Figueroa, I also want to ask you about concrete things such as the DREAM Act, the issue of supporting actively sanctuary spaces, sanctuary cities. Are these things that your union is prepared to do? I'm glad you mentioned that there are a number of unions that are now on board these things. And, of course, we should mention Local 10 of the ILWU, which has always been very active in political and social issues. But do you see supporting things like in rallying the treasury of the unions as well as its muscle, its people power behind things like the DREAM Act now, et cetera?
I do see it, and I think that we have a particularly important role to play in that Democrats at the national level need to be courageous. And I think you're going to see more of a demand for the DREAM Act, even from some Republicans. The question will be, what kind of a DREAM Act? At what cost, right? And we have to make sure that it does happen without being tricked into accepting corporate tax cuts, accepting a wall between Mexico and the U.S., accepting some of the most obscene and offensive policies of this administration. And I think it's going to be not only supporting the DREAM Act, but how do we do it and how do we engage the leadership of the Democratic Party on it?
Well, let me ask you this. To what extent is labor, when the Democratic Party either, organized labor has supported for years the Democratic Party, who has given very, very little in return? It just looks like something compared to where we are with the conservative wing of the Republican Party now, although that's kind of an oxymoron since the entire Republican Party is conservative. But what is... Is it not time for labor to actually become more critical of the Democratic Party, who has really rallied so very little around its needs, has really championed with such a low resonance the kind of issues of organized men and women in the labor force these days, and that's in the private and the public sector?
Yes, this is the time. Labor is under incredible, incredible pressure. There is likely a decision next year by the Supreme Court, the Janus case, that will deprive unions in the public sector of agency fees and will economically hurt unions. So there is a tendency, the more labor is under attack, there is a tendency to try to then look for all the help you can get and to get Democrats who are not fully on our issues in the hope that they will postpone or they'll give us some breathing space to be able to, regain our strength and push for our issues. And I think that strategy, whether it was right in the past or not, certainly has failed and certainly is not necessary anymore. We need to demand Democrats to really be there for labor unions. Had we had done that in 2008, in the middle of the worst economic crisis, we should have been advocating for making it easier for workers to join unions as part of the economic solution to the crisis. We should have advocated for comprehensive immigration reform as part of a solution to the ongoing economic crisis. And we were too shy to push hard for those things. Someone might say we fought for the universal health care, we fought for variations of health care that ended up in the ACA, and that was a tough fight, but the truth is we would live in a very different reality, I believe far more progressive. Pro-worker, have we pushed Democrats, have we pushed Obama when he got in office on the kind of issues that we knew would help change the electorate and build power for working people. So we cannot repeat that mistake again. Now we have the worst president we can ever imagine, total control of Congress by Republicans. This is not the time to be looking for the lesser of two evils, because right now we have the worst evil. So we need to demand Democrats to be really responding to working people. And if they are not, then they need to get out of the way. In New York, we have Democrats in the Senate caucusing with Republicans. And quite frankly, whether that strategy was good or not to pass legislation, it is absolutely unjustifiable now. And I have said this personally and publicly to the leadership of the IDC, that they should caucus with Democrats, they should embrace the issues of working people, and they should do it whether they're in the majority or in the minority. Because the point of now is not the calculus of political maneuvering, but the real existential threat that we face, which calls for us to be principled and to go back to allegedly what the goal and mission of, you know, Democrats should be. But I feel that there is a lot of good air.
Should we have a million worker march now?
I don't know if we have a million worker march. I'd like to see a million workers engaged into forming the union. I think that whether a big march will solve our problem, I really don't know. It would be fun. It would be good. We would feel extraordinarily excited and inspired about that day. But if then the goal is that we go back home and we keep doing what we're doing, I'd rather not have the march. And I'd like to see more workers being engaged, being organized. Our union is going to put a huge amount of resources, effort, and people in the Midwest to turn the tables on how that part of our country has gone non-union and has allowed this fascist president to win with the Electoral College. We need to do more than that. That's our contribution. I think that all other unions should also be part of similar efforts, and we need to put workers in motion. Then a march, I think, will be meaningful. But at this moment, a march of the unity of complacency or the unity of tradition or the unity of, convention is not very powerful. We need to have a march that shows the unity of being bold, courageous, and try to reinvent what labor is in the minds of ordinary workers.
Well, President Hector Figueroa, president of Local 32BJ, Service Employees International Union, that it is always enriching, rewarding to have you and to see the kind of representation that you provide for the men and women of your union. And we have to have you back to talk about the campaign that's still going on to unionize a whole number of airport workers. But the Local 32BJ, under the leadership of Hector Figueroa, is absolutely on the case. And thanks for that last comment in particular. Gives a lot of food for thought where we put our resources into organizing the unorganized, unionizing folks to get their benefits, their rights, and to do what Local 32BJ does, which is to represent people as whole human beings, and that is with their identities, their sensitivities, their civil and their human rights, as well as their economic benefits. Thank you for being the kind of labor leader that you are.
Well, thank you. You have to thank our members, because they really are the ones who expect this from us, and it's always a privilege to have the trust, and more importantly, for them to engage in the life of the union, which, you know, even though it's not perfect, it's over, it's ever something that we strive for, but have allowed us to do the things that we have done. Since 1999, this local has organized 75,000 workers, not through mergers, So 75,000 have been straight organizing work. And this is because workers took tremendous courage in striking, in fighting for the union. And that is the energy that allows me to talk the way that I can talk to you tonight. Not only my belief, but the ability that those workers have shown on the ground inspires me and gives me confidence that we can win this fight, we can organize, win social justice, and really change the course of this country from where it is now.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking with Hector Figueroa, president of Local 32BJ, Service Employees International Union.
Union! All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever. All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever. All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever. All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever.
Yo, the sound came to be a continuity from the ashes of the old. This wisdom is cold, brothers and sisters. It's time to look around. If we don't come master, we'll be driven to the ground.
It's a new millennium, new piece of history. All the workers come together, it's time for unity. While the rich just get richer, the poor keep forgiving.
That's
the sign of the times, reality is what we're living.
The media is deception, we get handed lies. But you can't cheat a worker, cause a worker is wise. Day after day, we have to keep it going. Year after year, the union keeps growing. Taking until millions that they never work to earn. But without a brain and muscle, not a single will could turn. Not a force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one. Solidarity forever, the union makes us strong.
All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever.
Paula Gonzalez sings Solidarity Forever.
All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever. All working people, it's time to come together. A union makes us strong, solidarity forever. Forever.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.